I really believe Twitter was invented just for me. One of my assistant coaches said, "Coach, if you published a book of all the things you've deleted off of Twitter, you realize it'd be a bestseller."
I'm
and
sure.
I'd also be unemployed. I see myself as a lifelong learner. I love building. I've got the brain of a builder and the heart of a teacher. And when you put those things together, that's a coach. Every teacher, they may not like athletics, but every teacher in every school, college, wherever, they're coaches.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you are dialed back into our podcast and another edition of our Dugout Chatter episodes, connecting each of us with the endless list of outstanding baseball folks inside our great game and this great association. We got a treat on deck for you today, just a fantastic interview, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But first and foremost, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. And we appreciate each of you listening in each and every week. Listening to these shows are coaches from across every single level of baseball, even players who are looking to learn more from the very best, even parents who may be thinking about coaching or just want more insight. But all of these folks center around one common theme. We are all personal growth junkies. We're all working to get better, take in this audio gold, and see the game more clearly. Today's show will help all of us in that regard. We took time to sit down with loyal ABCA member Brent Chaffin, better known as Butch, the head coach at Cookeville High School in Cookeville, Tennessee, a man with over 30 years under his belt in this game, but a young spirit, especially if you follow him on social media. Butchie brings an interesting perspective to this show, spending time as a high school assistant coach, a college assistant coach, an MLB scout for a period of time, and then back as a high school head coach for the past 15 years. Butch does it the right way and certainly for the right reasons. Inside this show, we open up Coach Chaffin on his reflections inside this game, developing young men in his program, giving them a big league experience throughout their career there at Cookeville. This year's Tennessee 6 AAA Coach of the Year, Butch breaks down his approach to teaching the game. We found out his desire to one day be a baseball broadcaster and that he actually had hair at some point, which there's still yet to be any visual proof of that, but we'll move forward knowing that maybe there was a chance. Just an awesome time chatting with Coach Chaffin, going through his USA baseball experience, plus the folks that influenced him the most inside this game, some of the powerful messages and lessons Butch offer us on the airwaves. This is a dynamite show. And once again, we're using these segments to help shine a positive light on the countless extraordinary baseball men that are part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA. And this guy is one of the very best. Butch Chaffin from Cookeville High School in Tennessee is our guest on today's Dugout Chatter episode. And get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. You know, the beauty of these Dugout Chatter episodes, we get a chance to sit down and talk with some of the great baseball men that are inside our game, and today is no exception. As we sit down and talk with the head coach at Cookeville High School there in Tennessee, we're talking to Butch Chaffin. Butch, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Cheech, it's my pleasure.
Well, it's an honor to talk with you. I know we've connected through social media. Also, we've got the chance to meet in person out in Anaheim. And we're just so thankful that we've got great men like you inside our association, Butch. And we're excited to get this on the airwaves for our coaches. But where we want to start is this, man, as a high school coach and a guy that's, we'll get back to your career path in a minute, but the guy that spent the majority of his career on the high school level, let's talk about the ABCA and what that's meant to you, because we have to understand that almost the majority of our membership come from the high school ranks. And so talking on behalf of yourself, but also to those other high school coaches that are out there, Butch, what's the ABCA meant to you?
Oh, ABCA, the information that you get from the ABCA is just, it's tremendous. And I'm 54 years old and I've been a coach for over 30 years. And the first time I went to ABCA, it was in Nashville, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go down there and see what this is all about. I love the game. I love, you know, all the personalities of the game. And so I wander into the building, and I'm a college player, in the 80s. And I just kind of, I'm wandering around the halls there at the Opryland Hotel. And I'm just seeing all these guys that you see on TV. And they're college coaches that if they walked down the sidewalk, most people wouldn't have known who they were at the time. But to me, they were just, they were unbelievable figures of the game. And
sure.
I just kind of started following some people around. And I'll never forget, I saw Coach Dado, who was out of coaching, and he was still there, and he had his cane, you know, the baseball bat that
sure.
we used as a cane.
Yep.
And he was just kind of standing there, and I went up and introduced myself and told him a couple stories, how I'd been to USC's baseball camp when I was born and lived in California. He just talked to me for like 15, 20 minutes, hugged me when we left, and I thought, man, that was amazing. And because he hugged me, I guess people around thought I was somebody, and they came up and started talking to me, and some of those guys I still talk to. And just meeting people and the wealth of information, it truly is the highlight of my year. We get some of my buddies together, and we always fly or drive to wherever it's at. And we can't wait to get there. When it's California, we go out a couple days early and drive around.
Sure.
And I see the sights and just sit and talk. And, you know, we've always said the ABCA speakers are unbelievable, but you can learn so much in the hallway. It's not even funny.
That's a fact. You know, to your point, Butch, you know, it's so interesting. Coaches sometimes, like, again, they look at those guys on TV. They see them out. They read their stories. They follow them on Twitter. And they don't realize that at the ABCA show, when you're there bumping elbows with 5,000 other guys just like you, but you see that coach that you recognize, man, that's the perfect opportunity to walk up, just like you did to Coach Dado, and introduce yourself and connect and ask his opinion on things and get that information so that you can go back to your program and be better. That's the perfect venue to do something like that, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons that I go is I get to see guys from all over the country. And, you know, it's a love fest. All you see is guys
sure.
hugging and slapping each other on the back and exchanging stories. And you have to really be careful. You know, you got to keep an eye on the speaker list because you don't want to miss those guys that you
sure.
know are going to be awesome. And your exhibit time, because once you hit that exhibit, you're going to be in there for about 3 hours.
That's
and you're
right.
going to look at probably 30 minutes of equipment and 2.5 hours of seeing guys that you know that you only get to see at the ABCA.
That's it. The old doom statement, hey, I'm going to run to my room real quick, because that never happens.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Butch. And we appreciate you being part of what we do, and it's always great to have you there. Now, I'm going to do a follow-up here, because you're talking about being a player in the 80s. Is that – I mean, you had hair then, right?
I had the best hair. my advice would be, coaches, use a conditioner and make sure your hat size is correct.
Oh, and we're going to have to get one of those pictures from your past, and we'll use it on our show images and make sure we pump that out. You know, something else while we got you, Butch, I really want to dive into, because I know this means a lot to you, and that experience was something that certainly you'll never forget, but it's something that you're very proud of, is your time that you spent coaching with USA Baseball. Could you open that up for our listeners?
Oh, my gosh. Life-changing.
Sure.
And I'm so lucky that I got into USA Baseball, and I tell people all the time, you know, I have coaches go, hey, I'd love to do something with USA Baseball. And in my mind, I just think, golly, I wish I had a channel to get you in. I got in because I was really lucky, and I got in when not a lot of people knew about USA Baseball, you know, the amateur side of it, and from the college ranks down. And in 2007, I was asked by a friend who was the national team, the 18U national team head coach, Mark Elkins, and he said, hey, you want to come over here to North Carolina and help out? And I was like, absolutely. Because I grew up, you know, with Mark McGwire in college playing mm-hmm. for the college team, Will Clark playing for the college team, and seeing that gaudy red, white, and blue Expos hat and those
it.
Uniforms, thinking, my gosh, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so I got over in 2007, and basically they called us Task Force, which is code for chase foul balls and catch bullpens. And I've never had so much fun in my entire life. It was about 18 hours of baseball, and you meet, you know, you're up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you met till 2 o'clock in the morning trying to find out, you know, who the national team staff wanted to take. Mm-hmm. And I've never had so much fun in my life, and just every year since 2007, you know, I've said, hey, whatever you guys need. And I've worked with the 18Us. I've worked with the 15Us. This summer, toward the end of the summer, I get to go to Taiwan with the 12Us to compete in the World Championships. In 2010, I was the pitching coach for the 18U team. That was Francisco Lindor's team. And it's unbelievable, the experience. And not everybody can be a USA guy. USA guys got to be willing to put that 18, 20-hour day in.
Sure.
And never complain. And eat that that five-hour-old sandwich with no mayo on the run while you're headed to your next game and watching guys. And I see thousands of kids every summer, and I'm so lucky and blessed to be a part of that. And the guys that got me into it, you know, the directors have changed and over the years, and I've got to work for some unbelievable guys, Rick Riccobono and Ray Darwin, just to name a few. It's unbelievable.
So awesome. You know, and we would be remiss if we got you on this call, Butchie, and we didn't spend time talking about social media. And this has been so awesome to watch your transition. I mean, it's almost, you know, for me, like watching a young pup grow up and get his legs underneath him, and now he's just out roaming the countryside. But guys, if you're interested, you've got to follow Coach Chaffin on Twitter. It's at Gabbage29, Gawbage 29. But what Butch again does is it's an unfiltered scope of what he sees out there. And I love the fact that you're on there and you're engaging with people, and you're certainly never shy away from a tough conversation. But talk about social media coming from the egg to now having a real picture up there. But talk about what social media has meant to you.
I really believe Twitter was invented just for me. One of my assistant coaches said, Coach, if you published a book of all the things you've deleted off of Twitter, you realize it'd be a bestseller.
I'm sure.
I'd also be unemployed.
That's it.
But last night, we're taping this, I guess, in June, early June. It's after game four of the Nashville Predators. And I'm like a lot of people. I casually watch some hockey. I'm not going to die on that hill. But
sure.
Apparently, I angered the entire state of Pennsylvania last night. Over a Predators Penguins tweet, so I had to back out of that one.
I saw you working on there.
I had to back out of it because, I have this fear that somebody's going to pull me through the phone and punch me in the face or
sure.
something. I don't realize they're thousands of miles away, and I don't want to anger, you know, anybody, but I tend to have a smart aleck side and a blunt side. And Twitter, I've connected with so many people on Twitter mm-hmm. and learned so much information. Golly, I could sit in all day and watch guys on Twitter argue about fly balls versus ground balls. That I get so
sure.
tickled about that. And, you know, I'll type something in and I'll delete it and go, no, don't get in this one. Just kind of watch this one.
That is that's the Herm Edwards advice to rookies in the NFL. Like, think before you hit send.
Absolutely.
That's great. Well, we appreciate what you're doing. I think, also, again, coaches, if you get on there and you connect with Butch, man, it's just an awesome dialogue back and forth. And certainly it's apparent, Butch, that you're just out to connect with more baseball guys, challenge what you're doing. And that's what we're going to get into a lot of this talk today. But I think where we need to start is, if you could, walk us through your career in baseball, coming up through high school, through college, and obviously your experiences that got you there, the head seat there at Cookeville High School.
Well, I mean, my whole life, if you knew a little about the backstory, my dad fought in three wars. He was on the beach at Normandy the night before setting charges. 83 guys in the mission, 80 of them got killed, and my dad was running off the beach when everybody was running on the beach. He ran away and joined the Navy when he was 16 years old, smudged his birth certificate. But on the flip side of that, the man never raised his voice. I never heard that guy yell, but he had a way about him. He had like an aura about how to get his point across. And then you compound that with a mother who she had to raise three children. When my dad was out of the country later on, he became an engineer. He went to college, Sheets, and didn't have a high school diploma.
Wow.
Just talked his way through it and got a degree in petroleum engineering, My mother was a nurse for 40 years. So I was part of that family. We'd fall down and she'd say, "Get up, you're not hurt." And sure. Then I'd watch her be so caring and loving with other people's kids. So I had two tough parents, and they were the kind of parents, in a roundabout, really kind way. They weren't taking nothing off nobody. And if you worked for it, you deserved it. And so that was the mindset that I had, early on, Little League. I was a stud defender, but I couldn't hit a baseball. I couldn't hit it off a tee, but if you threw it at me, anybody threw it at me, I could catch it. So they made me a catcher, and you know, that was a tough guy position. And I remember I was like 10 years old and I didn't make the Little League All-Stars, and I thought I was pretty good. And I got in the car and I kind of was crying a little bit. My mom went, "What are you crying about?" And I said, "Well, I didn't make All-Stars." And she goes, "You can't hit." And I remember
that's
thinking,
where it comes from.
I can't hit. She's right. And she goes, "If you want to make All-Stars, you need to learn how to hit." And to put a long story short, I never made Little League All-Stars. And then I never made, Pony League and Babe Ruth All-Stars. Mm-hmm. And my high school coach, I batted fourth on my high school team my senior year after getting cut my first year. I batted fourth my senior year, and he flat told me, he said, "You're one of our bigger guys. You look like you can hit. You can hit. We got a really good team. You don't fit anywhere, so I'm batting you fourth. Just act like it." So I'd get up there and take G hacks and every now and then sure. make hard contact, and everybody thought I could hit, but I was trash. And so apparently I fooled a couple junior college coaches, and I go to junior college and hurt a hamstring, but I'm a pretty good defender, and they really never got to see me. And then when they finally saw me, they were like, "Wow, you have a good arm. You're not a hitter." And they turned me into a pitcher, which was a blessing because now I'm learning every angle of the game. And sure. I finally got to learn about pitching. So, you know, I was raised to say what you mean. If you're wrong, say you're sorry, make it right, move on. Don't hold grudges. Mm-hmm. So that's my backstory. And then, even when I was in Little League, I knew I wanted to be a coach, even though my dad wanted me to be an engineer, and grades were big to my mom. So I made pretty good grades. And then I told him I was going to junior college, and my dad just kind of looked at me and walked away. And I thought, "Oh, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be." But they wanted me to be happy. So I went to junior college, and first junior college I went to, I played for an unbelievable coach who had a really bad team. They dropped baseball after that year, and we got free transfers. And I transferred to Walter State, which is now a junior college power, and I was on the front end of that. Mm-hmm. And he made me a sidearm pitcher, and I got to play in games one-third of an inning at a time. And I ended up going to Tennessee Tech and finishing up and playing there, and got some great experience there as far as being a coach and learning things, and became an unpaid assistant at my old high school. I didn't know assistant coaches were supposed to get paid. And I look back at that and think, how dumb and naive. I did it for free, and I put a lot of hours in, and he resigned, and I became the head coach and was the head coach for a few years and got the opportunity to coach in college a little bit, did that. Got an opportunity to work for Allard Baird, who at the time was the general manager of the Royals. And he put me on some stuff, and I did some special assignment stuff. So I got to see the evaluation side, pro side. Mm-hmm. Got involved with USA Baseball and got to see what really good players, what they do and how they do it and how they take this professional approach. You don't accidentally become a professional baseball player.
That's right.
And each year they drop out. And these guys in the big leagues, I've seen Molina in the cage at 6 a.m. in spring training, receiving balls off a pitching machine, and thought, "Oh my gosh, that's why he's who he is." And got a chance to come back and be the head coach at the school that I was head coach for the first time. The principal called me back and said, "You know, we've had 5 coaches in 6 years. Could you come back and stabilize this thing?" And I've been back ever since and loved every minute of it.
That's awesome. It's a great story. I'm so thankful you went through all that. I think it definitely gives our listeners some perspective on, especially where we're going with all this. Now, you and I were talking as we got recording, and kind of cut you off because I want to save this for the show, but a little off script, but talk about when you first became a head coach, young and still trying to figure it out. You break away, you move into college, you move into scouting, and now you come back to stabilize this high school program. Talk about the difference in perspective and the way that you've gone about things the first time as compared to the second time.
Well, the first time, I don't know, and I don't want to step on any toes, and I mean this is a learning lesson. I think the first time you become a head coach, most high school coaches become head coaches in their 20s. You think you're going to change the world, and you're going to do it your way, and you're going to make 500 rules, and everything's going to be scripted down to the minute, and it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And if I could say instead of trying to change the world, I'd say, change a little hunk of your world if you can each day. And, if you respect the game will respect you back a little bit. It doesn't owe you anything, but it'll respect you. And what I'd say is start slow. I started out as a head coach, and I confused intensity with leadership. And I was over the top intense, and I'm sure my players hated me. I wanted to win, and I thought if you won a game, you got more respect, and if you lost a game, people looked at you funny if you went in Walmart. And I'd lose two or three games, and I'd feel awful. And I got that shoulder shake, I call it. When you kind of snap back into perspective of what's going on around you. I was in a grocery store, and I walked up to the counter, and a kid that I had in class and several years earlier, and I said, "Hey, how are you?" And she said, "Hey, how are you, Coach?" And we had lost three in a row, and I felt terrible. And when you lose, you think everybody looks at you different.
That's right.
They think you're less of a human being if you're a coach and you lose games.
Sure.
And we were talking, and all of a sudden she goes, "Are you still coaching at the high school?" And I thought, "Oh my gosh." Here I am worried about three losses in a row, and she doesn't even know if I'm coaching anymore.
Right.
So that kind of shook me, and I was like, wait a minute, I got to be doing this wrong. And my first head coaching job, I didn't have any assistant coaches, and I was all by myself. And if it went downhill, it was my fault. And what I found out over the years is, there's some really good coaches out there that have really bad players, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can make a bad player marginal, and you can make a marginal player good, but the great ones are great. And if you don't have great ones, you're not going to be, you're not going to have great teams. But what you can have is you can give everybody an experience. You can give them a great experience. And what I try to do here is, we try to give our guys probably will never play in the big leagues. We've had some good players who've gone on to do some good things and be great people. But my guys are probably never going to play in the big leagues. And so we try to give them a big league experience here.
Mm, that's great. What are some of the details? Let's stay on that a little bit. What are some of the details that you have gone about running your program? What are some of the staples or pillars of the Cookeville High School baseball program there under your leadership?
I kind of in the last few years, and I've had a lot of help from some good guys, but guys develop their philosophy and they say, hey, we want to do this, or we want to do that. Well, you have to take what walks up at tryouts, and I'm at a public school in Tennessee, and we'll have our guys try out. And this past few weeks ago, we had our freshman tryouts, and once you make my team, you're on the team, by the way. Once you make the team, you're on the team. You never have to try it again, but it's up to you to actually get yourself into a game. And I've found that you can't preach team, love, loyalty, and all that, and then the next year cut a kid that you've been preaching that to. Mm-hmm. So once you're in, you're in. It's kind of like the mafia. Once you're in, you're in.
Sure.
But it's up to you to move up the ladder. And my guys, as a freshman, if they show ability, we had a freshman start this year, and he's got a left-handed stick, and he's going to be a really good player. But that's a rare thing. Usually freshman, sophomore, they'll play junior varsity, and then when you become a junior, you automatically bump up to the varsity. You may never play an inning in a game, but you're going to be in a varsity uniform because we're not going to clog that JV up. Because I'm all about development. Development, learning, taking advantages of opportunities. I'm that guy. And I think my guys, they know that, and I think they really like that. Wow. If I make adjustments, I listen to the coach, I do what I'm told to do, that guy's going to figure out how to get me in a game.
It's fantastic. And you actually walked right into my spider web on this one, because now we're going to talk about your development. So what we're interested for our coaches, Butch, is how do you continue to challenge your why in coaching after, you know, 30 years in the game? How are you continuing to develop and grow yourself? And what are those avenues that you're walking to do that?
I've been a psychology, sociology teacher also for 30 years. And, you know, some people are learners, and I see myself as a lifelong learner, and I love building. Like I said, if I hadn't been a teacher, I started out in college, I wanted to be an engineer, and I looked around the room, and I looked at those people, nothing against engineers, and I went, I'm not like these people.
Sure.
And then I'm a builder, though. I've got the brain of a builder and the heart of a teacher. Mm-hmm. And when you put those things together, that's a coach. And every teacher, they may not like athletics, but every teacher in every school, college, wherever, they're coaches. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the most out of their students, maximize, disseminate information, and maximize performance. And as a coach, that's what drives me. I love building a team. I love the challenge of what do we got coming back? What do we lose? Always finding a better way.
You know, you talked about that point in Little League where it just made sense to you. You knew in your heart of hearts you might walk a different path, but you were going to end up being a coach. Was there some moment that happened, or was there a coach that you played under that just changed the way you viewed things? Or what was the scenario that led you to that understanding of where you wanted to be in your career?
You know, when I was a little kid, like I said, I was born in California and kind of lived my early years in California. And we had Dodger season tickets, and I would go to a Dodger game as a 5-year-old, and I can still remember the first Dodger game that I saw. And I was they were playing the Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals, and Bob Gibson pitched for the Cardinals. And I remember thinking, how come the Dodgers shortstop bats first, but the Cardinals center fielder bats first? And my dad, you know, he kind of explained things to me, and I remember as a 5-year-old thinking, that's so cool. And I would go home and lay out baseball cards, and I'd put them in batting orders, how I thought it would work. Well, this guy, he's a big, strong guy, so he needs to bat here. And this guy, he's a little bitty guy, but he's fast. He needs to bat here. And as I grew up, I collected baseball cards, you know, like a lot of guys my age. And I would make out on pieces of paper, I'd make out lineups, and I'd watch baseball games. And my mother even commented one time, she said, you know, when you were little, you'd sit and watch baseball games and you'd write notes about what you were seeing. What were you writing about? And I would just, you know, I noticed, I remember I was a 7-year-old, and I noticed, wait times by pitchers, how sometimes they would come set and they'd throw, and then sometimes they'd set and they'd wait and wait and wait.
Sure.
And I remember asking my Little League coach, why do they do that? And my Little League coach couldn't tell me. So I just went around asking everybody, why do they do that? Why do they do that? And my mother told me, she said, you need to be a coach. And I kind of was like, I didn't even realize that was, you know, coach. Right. I thought that was my Little League coach. I thought that was his first name. I didn't realize it was a position. And so, you know, I just over time became so interested by the strategy of it all and how, you know, how you do certain things. And, you know, we get freshmen that come into our program and they've played baseball, you know, pretty much since they could walk. Mm-hmm. And I had a freshman tell me this year, I did not realize there was this much to it. And I said, yeah, there's a lot to it. There's more than just catching, throwing, and hitting. And he goes, this has been unbelievable. I just did not realize how much there was to it. Because we'll make our guys keep a notebook, and they write everything after workouts, everything in the notebook. And those notebooks are full at the end of the year.
That's so cool. you have guys that have that notebook and they just they keep one running throughout their entire career? Maybe they reference back to some things that they've learned, or you know, especially post career, that they still reference those notebooks?
Oh, absolutely. I have one former player. He's probably about 35, 40 years old. And he told me that he used his to coach his little league team, his son's little league team.
That's so cool.
And he said he would refer back to the book and he would teach him things that I taught him. And I just thought that was really cool. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know if I'm turning out any players, but I can turn out a little league coach.
There you go. That's all that matters. You're definitely doing a lot more than you can see on the surface right now. But I think keep kind of diving into this a little bit more, Butch, but always a question we love asking our coaches that are on our show is the highs and the lows throughout your career, because I think there's so much to be gained, certainly from the high moments, but definitely there's a great deal to be understood and move forward with under those lows. And so if you could, talk us through the different highs and lows throughout your coaching career.
I'd say the highs, you know, when you see guys, and I'm doing air quotes here, when you see guys do it,
yep.
When you see them, I take information, I demonstrate the information, they're looking at me and I know they're paying attention. And then you work on it. You work on how to field a ground ball, or you work on, you know, that swing in the cage, or you work on dirt ball reads at first base, and then you kind of go over them, and then you see it happen in a game. And I don't know, it's awful boring sometimes. I don't know what other people think, but I get bored in that third base coaching box sometimes, and I'll see a guy move up on a dirt ball read and I'll go, wow, I taught him how to do that. Good for me. Self high five. Way to go, you.
Sure.
You know, and I tell my guys all the time, you know, you're trying to teach them, I guess I go out of the way to teach life lessons, but I tell my guys, you know, you practice something for months and months and years and years, and then it comes up and you do it. It's a high that no drug could ever give you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you find your niche and you embrace your role and you become good at it, and I tell all my guys, hey, find something special that you can do and you'll find your way into a game. And that just the fact that my highs would be seeing my guys do something, you know, as a coach, I don't know, me as a coach, as an older coach, my rush comes in seeing a dog pile or seeing my guys being given a plaque or a trophy. That makes me feel really good because I know they feel good. And that's, to me, that's what it's all about. How can I give this guy a memory he's going to remember the rest of his life? You know, that game-winning walk-off hit, that stolen base when nobody thinks he can do it, striking out the side to send your team to the state tournament, you know, that kind of thing. That would be the high for me, I guess. Mm-hmm. The lows, I would say the lows in my coaching career are just like the lows in everybody else's. And it's not what somebody on the outside would think. My lows are a lot of days I remember guys that just didn't get it. They fought coaching. They fought the discipline of it all. They just rebelled against it. And, you know, I haven't dismissed a player from my team in a long time, but I have guys that will come and go, and it makes me sad. And it makes me sad that I couldn't get through to them, or they didn't get to finish, or they didn't get to share the brotherhood. They didn't get to share what goes in the locker room. They didn't get to share that joy on the field. They didn't get to be happy for somebody else. They didn't get to be happy for themselves. You know, the losing part of it, that's never any fun. But it's baseball, and sometimes the other guy's just better than you. And my guys, they refuse to accept that. And another low, I would think, would be, you know, when that parent of that kid that just doesn't get it, they don't get it. And coaches have to understand this. About a third of the people are going to like you, and about a third of the people have to like you, and about a third of the people, they're never going to like you. And if you can overcome that hurdle where people, you know, people are going to talk about you, and oh, you did this kid wrong and you cut my grandson or something like that. If you can work through that and come to grips with it, it's going to happen. I think that creates a low a lot of time. And I've coached for 30 years and I've cut a lot of kids, and I have to live in a town where I've cut kids, and you know, it's just part of it.
Okay. So this is always a tough question, especially for a guy that's a baseball lifer. But if you weren't coaching, we talked about the engineering, but let's say that's out of the equation too. If you weren't coaching, what would you be doing?
If I wasn't coaching, I think I'd like to be a broadcaster.
There you go. Okay. Dive into
that. I listen to KP and all those guys on college baseball games. Yep. And I know I'm not as good as them, but I think I could be the straight man to KP or Gross or somebody like that. I really think I could do that.
You need to get you down on the field, because it'd be easy to see that bald head down the field. Like, well, he's right over there by the first base dugout. Send it down to Butch.
I have a face for radio, so I'd be more of a radio guy.
There you go. Well, hey, beggars can't be choosers. If you get an opportunity, you got to take it.
That's right.
Now, this is always an interesting one, too, because it's really diving well past these white lines, but hobbies or hidden talents. What's inside that Chaffin tool belt that not a lot of people know about?
That they don't know about?
Sure.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. I'm pretty evil with fungo bat. I have more fungo bats than most people have golf clubs. I've got all sizes, all composition, wood, aluminum. I got all that. I'm a plus BP arm.
Yep.
From 45 feet, I can hit bats all day long. And I think that's a talent. That's an acquired. Because I watch my coaches do it, and I'm like, how are you guys no good at this? Because I spent, you know, my last 3 years as a college player, I spent my time as a pitcher. And I had my junior college coach told me one time, you throw too many strikes. And I was like, that's the objective, right? And he goes, no, but they know it's going to be a strike. So they're not uncomfortable. So my guys in the cage, they're not uncomfortable because they know I can hit a bat.
There you go.
Hidden talent. You know what, Sheets? I'm a pretty good dad. I have three daughters.
There you go.
And you know, coaches' kids. My daughters love being coaches' kids.
Yeah.
And I'm a pretty good dad. And they're perfect coaches' kids. My wife, she's a wonderful coach's wife. She doesn't stand my business. She's like all wife. She's just like, don't bring it home.
Sure. Yeah.
But my kids all learn to drive. They learn to drive a mower or a gator. And you lock the campus down on a Sunday when nobody's here and let them go crazy in a gator. That's how they're all pretty good drivers. So I think being a pretty good dad is a hidden talent.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. Mowing grass and drinking coffee are pretty much my hobbies.
Yeah, there you go. And you're pretty darn good at both those. I love this question. I've had so many great stories come out of this, but if you could think back, what are some of the funniest stories that have come from all your years in the dugout?
Oh my gosh. a lot of them, a lot of funny stories. 2013, I had a team they lost the 18th game of the year, and they lost the game to go to the state tournament, because we ran into a big power arm, Sheffield, and here in Tennessee, and he was just carving. He goes on, he's going to be a first round. He was a first round draft pick. I believe he's in the Yankee system now, but we were 33-1 rolling into this game, and I'd been feeling bad, physically bad, for a couple of days, and I was like, what's going on? And about the fourth inning, I pass a kidney stone in a Gatorade bottle in the dugout closet, and I'm on my knees, and I want to die.
What?
And I would have rather taken a fastball in the dome than pass that kidney stone. And I passed that kidney stone, came running out of that room, and coached third, and we finished that game. We lost the game. We lost like 5-3. And I was like, good golly, that loss isn't that bad compared to that kidney stone.
That's the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard.
I did not realize I had back, my back was hurting. I was like, what have I done? And I learned later, and I've heard people say this since, passing the kidney stones is kind of like giving birth to a baby.
Sure.
And then I did not know that. If I'd have known that, I would have just laid down in that room. But yeah, so I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Hey, go coach third. We're trying to get this.
Hey, man, we got a game to play. We got a game to play, coach.
Another one, early when I came back to this school, I really didn't know the other players in the district. You know, there was no internet, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so we were playing this team, Blackman High School, and I've got scouts calling me, and they're like, Butch, don't cancel this game. And I'm like, you lost your mind. It's 30 degrees and snowing out there. And they went, don't cancel this game. And so I didn't cancel the game, and the other team rolls in. I was like, what's the deal? They're 500. And they roll in, and they put this dude on the mound. This left-hander was about 6'4 and weighed about 185 pounds.
Oh, goodness.
And he starts throwing, and I'm like, oh, I get it now. And his first pitch, the radar guns popped up, and I thought we were being held up at the concession stand because there must have been 30 radar guns that popped up. And I was like, this is a straight setup. And I had said earlier in the week in the paper, I said, hey, you know, Murfreesboro Blackman, they've got a guy, he's pretty good, and another school's got a guy pretty good. But our guy, I think he's the best pitcher in the district. And he was pretty good. And so the game gets rolling, and in the first inning, he strikes us out on 9 pitches. And I'm looking at the lineup card, and I'm like, I need to remember this name. And so we go to the second inning, and I'm like, hey, guys, foul a couple off. Let's see if we can run his pitch count up. Well, anyway, long story short, we get to the seventh inning, and we struck out 21 times in a seven-inning game, but they haven't scored either. And my guy struck out 16.
Oh, wow.
And every time I walk by the dugout, I'm like, hey, high-profile guy. And the other coach's name was Doug. And I said, hey, Dougie, high-profile guy, how long are you going to leave him in? It's freezing out here.
Sure.
So he broke nervous and pulled him out after he had struck out 23 in 8 innings. And they made a pitching change, and my guy led off the inning, got hit by a pitch. We bunted him over and got a single in the sixth hole and won the game 1-0. The guy that was pitching for Blackman High School was David Price.
Yeah, sure was.
The guy that got hit by the pitch to start the thing and score the winning run, his name was Rich Froning. He goes on, and he becomes the 4-time fittest man on the planet.
That's right.
For CrossFit. So there were a couple high-profile guys in that game.
Wow, that's awesome. I forgot that, yeah, well, that's one of your famous alums there.
Yep.
How about that? Yeah, he's definitely got the fitness thing figured out, that's for sure.
He's a dude, man. He is. He donated money so we could build this nice new locker room, and he's always around. He's the most down-to-earth guy. Yesterday on Good Morning America, another my former right fielder, he's a singer now. He's the lead singer for Judah and the Lion, Judah Akers. And, wow. He was on Good Morning America yesterday. So, we've turned out a few guys.
Yeah. I mean, it may not be in the major leagues, but you're still pumping some dudes out there.
They find their way.
Exactly. Here's an awesome one too, Butch. I'm interested in this. These are the personal Mount Rushmore question where it gets to the 3 or 4 guys that have impacted you the most inside our game. So if you could nail those down, who would you exalt and put up on that pedestal?
I knew you were going to ask this question, mm-hmm. and I've thought about this more than anything. My Mount Rushmore is going to have a lot of people on it. And
knock it out, brother.
From my Little League coach, who just kind of put us out there and made us love the game, to my high school coach, who taught me, hey, there's a little bit more to it, and play hard. And he was demanding, and we conditioned and we did stuff that is legendary in these parts. And of course, my mom and dad, the toughness that my mother and my father kind of put in me. Jeremy, if you and I, if we got into a fight, I'm not saying I'd win the fight, but I could take every punch you hit me with in the face. I know I could, because that's just how I was raised. Sure. You know, you cut yourself, you bleed a little bit, it's okay. You still got breath in your body. Keep going. And my dad, he was a dude. My first high school game, you know, I watch games and I'm a head coach and I'm so nervous on the inside. And there's a close play and I go out to argue the play. And, you know, I'm in Tennessee. I think the umpire's name was like Peanut or Squirrel or something like that.
Of course it is.
I'm standing there and I'm like, there's no way he touched him. And this guy, we're kind of going back and forth. And I hear my dad on the other side of the screen. And I hear him go, Hey now. And he used to say that when we were about to do something wrong, he'd go, hey now. And I hear this, hey now. And I immediately turn and walk off. And after the game, he goes, you were right. Why didn't you stay there? And I said, I heard you saying, hey now. And he was like, I was talking to the umpire. I wasn't talking to you. And I thought, okay, lesson learned.
Yep.
And I've been thrown out of one game in 30 years. And it was last year. And the guy threw me out with my back turned. And I was 10 feet away. And he's a 22-year-old umpire. And I don't hold that against him. But that's when I was feeling a little bit more important than I actually was. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to state my case. And he didn't want any part of it. And he was going to defuse it by getting rid of me. And so I think coaches are on my all my friends. Gosh, I got so many unbelievable, great baseball minds that I can pull from. My mom and dad, my kids. My kids have taught me so much about what's important, what's not important. Right. My daughters are, you know, my oldest daughter, she's a missionary in Singapore, and she's taught me, you know, it's okay to venture out and get out of your comfort zone. And my middle daughter, she's married and she's pregnant with my first grandchild, and she's just super tough. She was cheerleader / cross country. And my oldest daughter, she was a soccer player. And my oldest daughter, I'd get a folding chair and I'd sit down at the end of the, you know, soccer pitch in high school. And she was an average athlete, but she always started because she knew angles and she played defense and she was tough too. And she's sweet, but man, when she played, she might've been the dirtiest player in high school soccer.
Love it.
And she told me one time, she said the best gift I ever gave her is I never learned the rules to soccer. So I never knew what to yell. So I never yelled like the other parents.
Yep.
And man, that was pretty cool by accident. And my oldest daughter, she's got my back all the time. And she still comes. Her and her husband come to every home game. And, you know, I see them before I go talk to the team. And I have to get a hug and a kiss from them. And my youngest daughter has been a type 1 diabetic since she was 4 years old. And she's a junior in high school now.
Wow.
And I've seen her just go through stuff that nobody should go through. And she's done it, you know, with grace and dignity. And she never complained. And she's the sweetest kid on the planet, and she is as tough as rock. And, you know, I've learned so much from them. The people that I teach with and coach with, I just pick up information every day, and there's a sense of humor there. And I heard one time that people stay at a job because they love who they work with, not how much they get paid. And if you're a school teacher, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And I have so many people on my Mount Rushmore, and then all these college guys that are just good, solid college guys that will stop and talk to a high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like Tim Corbin, Coach Corbin, that guy, what he's done at a place where they said, you know, people don't realize 15 years ago, the experts said nobody can win at Vanderbilt. They don't have the resources to win. And that, you know, Coach Corbin comes in and, you know, he sets the bar really high.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a high school coach and you're not modeling after what Coach Corbin does, you're doing it wrong. And we picked up so much from him. He opens up his practices. If you're in the lobby, I've never been in the lobby of the ABCA where, you know, I go out and I do my 11-minute mile and trot it out, come back, look like I got hit by a truck. 5:30 in the morning, Coach Corbin sitting there in a chair with a suit and tie on, and he'll look over the top of his reading glasses and go, good run, Butch. I'll go, yes, sir. And I'll sit and talk with him for a while. And he's just, he's an amazing guy, but there are so many of those guys out there that they appreciate the high school coach.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I want you to stay on that because this is certainly a platform for you. No pressure here, but speak on behalf of the high school coaches around the country. If you had a chance to send a message out to the parents or send a message out to the college coaches, on behalf of high school coaches, what would you offer those folks?
I'd say if you're a high school coach, first of all, you know, like I said, I've scouted, I've coached at the college level. I've worked with the USA guys, and those are all unbelievable opportunities that I've had. But I love being a high school baseball coach. I love seeing my guys in the hall every day. I love having them in class. I love that interaction. I love practice. I love being with my guys. I love being able to talk to my guys at the end of the game. I love being able to talk to my guys during the game. My guys know that I'm tough and I'm going to push them. They also know I'm exploring every avenue to set them up for success, be it passing on knowledge to them or laying down a little strategy to help them out. I respect my guys and my guys respect me. And, you know, as a baseball coaches are special. And I told somebody else this, at the ABCA, you go in the exhibit hall, and there are hundreds and hundreds of people that just lay their lives out on tables to try to sell. And when the place closes up, you know, a few years ago when the place is about to close, they make that announcement, hey, the exhibit hall will close in 20 minutes. And everybody starts just walking away from their tables, leaving gloves, bats, everything out on the table. And one year I was like, you guys just leave this out on the table? And they were stunned. They were like, yeah, you're baseball coaches. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And they said, now football coaches come in next week and we have to put everything up because a football coach will pick up a football and walk off with it. Baseball coach will pick a glove up, pound it in the pocket, walk around, do a lap, come back and put it right down where he found it.
Wow.
Baseball coaches are special. You know this. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And it breaks my heart when I see that 29-year-old who goes, I'm burned out. I can't do this anymore. And when guys say they're burned out, my first thought is, were you ever on fire? Now, I understand I get tired, and that's the best part about being a head coach. We can play 3 days in a row, and that fourth day I can go off day. Get away. Go sure. away. And my guys look at me, and I can tell that they're saying thank you with those eyes. Mm-hmm. But I need an off day, too. I need a health day, too. And, you know, baseball coaches, the terms used, they're grinders. Mm-hmm. And baseball coaches probably have more pride in what they do than any other coach. Because, you know, I look at our basketball coach, and I love our basketball coaches. I do. And they're good. But the day they drag a mower out and mow that court and have to put the lines down before every game, mm-hmm. that's when I'll get a little bit more respect. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm out here. I mow the grass every day. We put the lines down. My coaches make fun of me because I created this system to put super straight lines down on a baseball field that we are probably the only people in America that use. And the dirt's got to be right. The grass has got to be right. The water on the mound's got to be right. We got to use a certain kind of ball. We wear majestic uniforms just like the pros do. We use good gear. We've got great hats. Every player has their own batting helmet. It's things that a lot of guys do,
sure.
but that's because they're baseball coaches, you know, and I see coaches in other sports when they get uniforms, they're trying to pick out the cheapest, best bargain. I'll pay a little bit more. I want good quality because I want my guys to feel good about what they're doing because they put in a lot of time. They put in a lot of hours mm-hmm. and I want them to be special. And I tell them all the time, you're special. And because you're special, I'm going to demand more. But because I demand more, I'm going to treat you different. I'm going to treat you better than a normal person would treat another person. And, you know, young coaches, keep going. Find a way to stay fresh. Make friends. Find mentors. Find people you can talk to on the telephone. Just stay with it. And by all means, develop, develop, develop. Teach, teach, teach. If you do a good job teaching and developing, you're going to win some games.
Butch, on behalf of the ABCA, man, we're so thankful that you're inside our association. Love the knowledge, love the wisdom, love the perspective that you've offered on this show. And we're just very thankful for your time and joining us on our calls from the Clubhouse Podcast. Man, keep doing what you're doing. Keep tweeting, keep impacting these players there at Cookeville. And man, we'll look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Sheets, you don't know how much this means to me. You know, to have ABCA call me and ask me if I wanted to be part of this, it's unbelievable. And hopefully I gave you something that other guys can use. I'm just so grateful to be part of the organization and to be a baseball coach.
You're the best, man. Look forward to talking with you soon, my man. See you, Butch.
All right. Thanks, Sheets.
I told you that would be a great one. Just awesome stuff from Butch Chaffin, head coach at Cookeville High School in Tennessee. Always value connecting with the endless list of extraordinary baseball men inside this association, and we're thankful to have guys like Coach Chaffin that are so loyal and proud to be members of the ABCA. Thanks again for the time, the perspective, Butch. We appreciate you joining our show, and we wish you guys the very best of luck moving forward. As we always do, just keep reminding you, these are for you. This podcast works to connect each of us with some of the very best coaches in our game. We don't want you to miss out on anything we release, so here's the rundown. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play, hit the subscribe button. Click that button, it'll show up on your phone every single time we put a brand new episode out. Number two, you can stay plugged into our website, abca.org. Click on the education tab at the top. Call us on the Clubhouse Podcast link. We'll be right there waiting for you. And lastly, number three, give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. We'll announce the release of our show. We'll pull the link. We'll pull quotes. We'll put all that out through our Twitter feed at ABCA1945. Now, if you're into social media and you're also into personal growth, you need to check out our ABCA chats on Twitter. We just finished one up last night, and hashtag ABCA chat is where coaches from around the world all connect, share coaching information and philosophies, open themselves up to being challenged while networking and building relationships with other coaches all at the same time. It's powerful, and we hope you can check it out for yourself. Our next hashtag ABCA chat will be Monday, June 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We post questions to the group. You pose your answers back to us. It's only for an hour, and it will make you a better coach. Check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat, Monday, June 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, if you're out there, make sure you're following us on Twitter, at ABCA1945. You can find me on there as well, at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Here's a segment from one of the countless emails we received over the past weeks, and this one's from Dan McKinney, a young assistant coach at Kirkwood Community College in Kansas, a loyal ABCA guy and podcast listener. And he writes us to say, thank you guys for what you're doing for the game of baseball and young coaches such as myself. I feverishly listen to each podcast, and I can't begin to tell you how thankful I am for the wealth of insight, knowledge, and lessons that are shared by everyone involved. These speak so clearly to me. Dan, thank you so much for sending that to us. And guys, that is why we continue to put these out each and every week, because of listeners like you and Coach McKinney. We truly appreciate that. And again, reach out to us anytime. We love connecting with our coaches. We love to hear how these shows and the positive things we're doing are affecting each and every one of you guys. We look forward to hearing from each of you very, very soon. And lastly, just in case you didn't know, for only $45, you can join the world's largest baseball coaching fraternity, the American Baseball Coaches Association. If you want more information, head over to our website, abca.org. We hope to see you jump on board with us. And as always, coaches, we wrap up. We thank you for listening in. We truly appreciate you staying dialed in to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, we ask that you keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging what you're doing inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.